Chapter 17. Vaux is walking towards the hangars. A little lord, the one he brought to Philemon to recover, waddles along beside him. Out of courtesy, Vaux slows his pace, allowing the puffing creature to accompany him to the Thunderhawk. Hololiths glimmer around him, glowing like traces of a ghostly spider's web. They show runes and trajectories and damage reports. They overlap, they shift and slide, and he absorbs them all. Nearly all of his forces are on the surface now, squeezing the citadel hard. He sees the vectors of his legion's few flyers as they pummel the outer walls. He sees the progress of tank groups, laying low the first level of defences before creeping forward. He watches the kill tallies click over and notes the names of his warriors who die. Lists will be drawn up when this is all over. The fighting has begun in earnest now. Breaches have been blasted into those ramparts, holes through which the twin legions pour. The volume of cultist troops is enormous, and demons come with them. Having overseen the assault plans, he must join them now. He must tear himself away from the ledgers and the scan logs and breathe the physoline acrid air of another world. He sees Philemon at the end of the corridor. The tallyman has little lords clustered all over him, clinging to his armour and his quills and his strings of counter beads. Philemon looks flustered. He has had much to put in place for this assault, and only now will he join it.
"Enjoy this, brother," Vaux says.
Together they walk on down the corridor, surrounded by a scuttling mass of tiny bodies.
"You wished for hunting. Now you have it." "It was a warp kick," Philemon says, pulling at the hem of his cowl. "Something got into the pulse lines. An overload somewhere. We could have been atomized. We could have gone into a full shift, and now we'd be soul food for the Neverborn. We were in a gravity well. By the god, I still do not understand it." "You are not an engineer, tallyman," Vaux says. "And now we are fighting. It can wait."
Philemon remains agitated.
"You know why they did it. You know why. They wanted us blown so far off course we couldn't follow the order." "A dangerous way to achieve that goal." "This is serious."
A little lord reaches up to Philemon's chin, and the tallyman, uncharacteristically, slaps it away.
"We were fighting then, too. We are all engaged. And someone knew. They knew that the beacon would be gone, and that we'd have to claw our way blind through the void. Who would know that, Vaux? What conversations were had before we left for Agrippina? You tell me, brother. Did you ask your demon? I plucked some more feathers. There's a shroud over this. We should be halfway to Ultramar by now."
Vaux looks at him as they walk. He wonders why the tallyman is so discomfited.
"There would be better ways to achieve that goal," he says. "Less dangerous ones. I think someone made a mistake." "Garstag was seen in the Enginarium," Philemon says. "We looked into the cultivator's memories, Count Quick and I. Garstag was down there. Why was he there? What business has the Cardane Master in the engines?" "Garstag. What business, eh?"
Vaux wonders if this is just combat stims. Their bodies are not what they were centuries ago. Every engagement erodes them a little more. Their blood roars through weaker veins and seeps out into slacker muscles. Maybe Philemon is feeling it.
"Garstag knows nothing about warp drives," he says.
Philemon snorts.
"You're blind, Vaux. I have already told you, and you do not listen. We are a long way from your protector, and the longer we linger here, the worse it will get."
Vaux halts.
"Do you really think I am blind, Philemon?"
he asks gently.
"Do you think I have done nothing, knowing what is whispered? Calm yourself. I have done as you recommended. We are at war again now, just as you counseled, and we will win this one handsomely. Your allies will betray you, Philemon says.
Vorks almost punches him.
They have deployed 743 warriors to our 621. They have 34,567 troops drawn from their bonded slave caste and command the allegiance currently of 128 demonic creatures. They have 56 major armor pieces, and I also have done the sums. The warp is thinning over that citadel, says Philemon. Count Quick tells me something big waits on the other side, and it will not be friendly to us. You know these people. You know why they desire a world like this. Just one sacrifice, one big drawing of blood, and they will have all the power they could ever command.
He is becoming exasperated.
This is what they do!
My friend, says Vaux,
and means it, for they are friends, after a fashion.
Our task is to take this world and give honor to the faith. That is my only intention. Your concerns are noted, though your intimation that I am ignorant of the dangers is unwelcome. All is as it should be. Now, I wish you to add your blades to the others. I have only one specific command. Otherwise, you may slay where you will.
Philemon looks up at him. Doubt clouds his face. Unlike most of them, Philemon still has the lingering traces of human features and mannerisms, and does not spend his life masked behind a decaying helm face.
Anything, he says.
They will fight hard at the end. I would not wish for one of us to take the credit for a successful outcome. You must detain him, Philemon. Wrap him up in fighting. I know you know how to do it.
Philemon looks at him doubtfully.
Is that not dangerous?
Only for the enemy.
Vaux smiles under his rotting mask.
Cledo has orders to find the master of the city. When he does, I must be at his shoulder, ready to claim the kill.
He places his gauntlet on Philemon's shoulder and feels the mass of boils and pustules blistering under the hard surface.
Try not to worry. All have roles, all have purposes. Even now, the matter unfolds according to the gods' grand design. Sooner or later, this will become apparent to all of us, even the lowliest.
Dantine has fought on many worlds before, but not like this. He has gone into battle with a lasgun in his hands and a burning horizon ahead, but not like this. A part of him thought that he might be left behind on the ship, and so he curled up in his cell, alone, hoping to be forgotten.
He knows that it was his soul trail that brought them here. His life on Sabatine as a lieutenant in the Astra Militarum left its trace on the warp, just as all life leaves its trace there. Perhaps his valor even made its mark, his capacity for bravery among squads of loyal men and women. But it is likely that the other thing made a greater impression, the shame of his demotion, betrayal, discovery. The warp, Dantine thinks, seems to absorb the darker sides of human nature more readily than the lighter. It is a sink for the emotions, but drinks more readily of baser instincts. Nothing he ever did in the past, however, compares to this. He was taken alive on Najan. He was made into a tool for the monsters. And now he has led them here, to the world of his birth, where they will destroy it all. His name is all over it. If any annals are ever written of this sordid episode, somewhere, in some footnote or cross-reference, it will be said that Captain Dantine, the weak, the traitorous, was the cause of it all. It matters not that he intended none of it. It matters not that he had no choice. Choice, intent, weakness. These are things to be despised, says the Inquisition. Only outcomes matter. Only orders followed or objectives achieved.
They came for him near the end of the muster. Vorx must have sent them, he thinks. Two of his unbroken, foul-smelling, with seeping eye-lenses and fungus-brown armour. He could not resist, of course, and was dragged from his cot and thrown into a shuttle bay with hundreds of other unchanged. Somehow he found himself with a rusty lasgun in his hands, an ancient mark, more like a flintlock than a serious weapon, its power pack already half-depleted and leaking acid. On the descent, he reflected on the use of the word unchanged for those human slaves the Death Guard employ. It is a strange name, for they have all been changed in many ways. Some of that is physical. They carry sores and boils and infections beyond count. Most are dying of something or other, although few seem to mind that, or even notice it. Some of their slavery, then, must be mental, too. They cough up blood, and then grin. They wheeze and gasp and clutch at their throats, but no word of complaint passes their scabrous lips. Some are little more than imbeciles, the ones that grin all the time and seem like flesh puppets, but others retain at least some faculties. These are the ones that man the crew stations, that aim the ship's great guns, that pilot the shuttles and refuel the landers. They are mad by Imperial standards, but not insensible. Then again, as Vorx told him, what is sane about anything in this galaxy? What is the greater madness? To be sick and happy, or healthy and desperate? Such blasphemy, he thinks. How swiftly I have fallen. After making planetfall, he finds himself jostled towards the front line along with the others. There are no orders, no ranks, just a stumbling headlong race. He struggles to breathe, to keep his feet. His chest hurts, his hands ache. He barely recognizes the world he once served on. It smells foul, corrupted. The ground is hot from the massed orbital lasers. It is pitch dark, and the flashes of the explosions do little other than disorientate him. So he just stumbles with the rest of them. Only slowly, after a long march, does he get some sense of where he is. Great lasbeams smash through the press around him, immolating those in their path. Shells land in the crowds, blowing the invaders into tatters of flying flesh scraps, and no one stops moving. He sees the pale lenses of his tormentors in the gloom, but they are far away, herding them like cattle. In the distance somehow, over the crash and boom of ordnance, he can hear agonized cries and chanting in harsh tongues. Then he sees walls above him and realizes how far he has come. The battlements are already ruined, their summits lying in a sawtooth slump of rubble. Bodies are piled up, absurd amounts of bodies, and they create a haphazard ramp up to the breach. Lasbeams fly around him, making the air fizz, yet none touch him. The toothless wretch on his left side is hit by an explosive bolt and flies backwards into the dark. Another takes his place, and they keep climbing. He glimpses the great dark hulls of tanks crunching across fields of corpses, lights flaring, engines revving. Everything is blurred, everything is moving. He is not afraid. He feels cold, always cold, and guesses that is because Vorx is far away. He reaches a crown of buried corpses and smouldering wreckage, and spies the enemy for the first time. They are crouched in their positions on the inner rampart edge, holding the line, firing methodically and well. In the dark, he recognizes the colors he used to wear, grey and blue, and sees the charred remains of battle standards snapping crazily in the crosswinds. Somehow, he has made it to the front line. The other bodies move jerkily, caught in a freeze frame. The unbroken, masked by the hordes of stumblers, are fighting their way inside the citadel, grinding towards the interior where the towers rise and the searchlights whirl. Mobile armor comes with them, smashing through half-demolished walls, barrels swiveling. Overhead, gunships hover on heat haze that makes the air shake, emptying magazines into far-off targets. He has not yet fired his weapon. He feels like a spare part, a piece of driftwood thrown up on a dark tide. The air fills with more lasfire, vivid and searing, and it makes his eyes water. He stumbles, falling to his knees on a pile of powderized stonework. Before he knows it, he's falling, tumbling down the far side of a long heap. When he regains his feet, he has slipped far down into the citadel's grounds and can see the enemy on either side of him, much closer now. From somewhere, a desperate hope suddenly kindles. He holds his gun up, holds his other hand up, and staggers towards the nearest barricade.
"Do not fire," he croaks. "I can fight with you."
This is the only way out. One last time, fighting with those he has doomed. If he kills one of the monsters this way, just one of them, that would be something. He gets closer and can see the glint of grey helms over the heaps of rubble.
"Let me,"
he shouts. The first shot hits him in the shoulder, throwing him back. The beam slices straight through, punching the mesh of his uniform and fizzling out the other side. He reels and drops to one knee. Then another one hits him, slapping into his chest and hurling him onto his back. It doesn't hurt. It is just cold. He feels a trickle of blood in both wounds, but it is black and stinking. He rolls over, coating himself in mud. Both those wounds should have been fatal, but he is still breathing. He tries to lift himself, and his arm gives out. He collapses back to earth, and his face hovers for a moment over an oily puddle. There is a flash in the skies, some starburst of munitions going off, and for a fraction of a second, he catches his reflection in the water. No wonder they fired. He barely looks human. His eyes are bulging, his cheeks hollow. His old uniform is just rags now, exposing a horrifying body, jutting ribs, swathes of bile-greased fat. He has no teeth. When did he lose those? Just an empty mouth that runs with bloody saliva. He has no hair, and the skin on his scalp is flaking off, uncovering the skull beneath. He hangs there for a moment, over the water, staring. If he still had a heart, it would be hammering. His fists clench, dragging through the bloody gravel. He wants to scream, but he has already done so much of that. "This is how I look to them." And he finds then that he cannot even remember what he looked like before. He gets up. He is panting, but not from exertion. He is still cold, but there is something else inside him now. He is confused. He might be angry. He swings round, back towards the barricades. From behind him, he can hear others sliding and stumbling down the long slope. His people.
His people.
He opens fire. The lasgun whines, sending the first shot into the night. Then he fires again and starts to walk. Soon he is joined by the others, and they advance in something like formation. The fires roar overhead. Smoke tumbles across the cityscape, and it coils around his boots. He will be at the barricade soon. He will be unstoppable when he gets there. He feels a spark of pleasure in that. He guesses he ought not to, but can no longer remember why. He fires, and fires again. Dantine has fought on many worlds before, but not like this. It is better this way, though, he thinks. It is something he could learn to like. The charges blow, demolishing the entire tunnel wall ahead of them. Garstag is running before the last of them ignites, his huge body hurtling into the flying debris. For the most part, Garstag moves slowly, but when he has to, when the old rages are stoked again, he can still generate frightening momentum. His chainsword swings, batting aside falling rock, and he barges through the rest of it, shouldering aside tottering pillars and wheeling around to find a target. The rest of the Cardane come behind him, cutting and blasting. Slurts, unbroken, are still working the turbo hammers, enlarging the breach and securing its edges against collapse. It already stinks in here, the spore they brought with them caking the fire-heated stonework, the fetid air spilling up into sterile chambers. Garstag powers upwards, smashing aside the damaged remains of a doorway and crashing into a vaulted hall beyond. They are waiting. Alarms sound, tinny and shrill, and whirling warning lumens make everything bloody. The last fire is not as it was on Najan. It is precise, directed, massed on single points. Garstag runs right into it, his body taking the hits. His battle brothers are close on his heels, and they wade into the fight, building up the swing of their scythes. Gastag says nothing. He pants, he grunts, he works the gunning blades, but no words pass his lips. He can hear the enemy shouting to one another, orders, warnings, even that stale old injunction, "For the Emperor." It seems to help them. Gastag has never uttered a war cry, not even when he fought in the Barbaran Legion, and these divisions had not yet emerged. Like all his legion, he enters combat in silence, letting his work speak for him. To invoke another, even the Primarch, would be to admit weakness, a lack of self-sufficiency, to open the suspicion that there is luck or favor involved in these things. He shrugs off more hits and lumbers towards the first barricade. They have barred the width of this chamber halfway along its length, dozens of them, all armored, holding their ground and keeping discipline. He finds himself admiring that, even as he crunches through the first barrier and starts his chainblade whirling again. Behind him, he can hear more invaders pouring up through the breach, their armor steaming from the last dregs of Slurt's broth. Bolt shells crack out, spinning into battle plate and exploding, throwing bodies aside. The first tang of blood enters the melange of aromas, and it spikes Garstag's battle mood further. It takes him a moment to realize that not all the bolt shells are coming from the Unbroken. The chamber is dark, already filling with smoke, and he almost misses the faint flash of white and blue power armor. They are high up, the corpse spawn, in a gallery level that runs around the rim of this chamber, and they are breaking out of cover now, hemming them in and pinning them down. Gastag sees Arterion take a flurry of hits, stumbling over them, his breastplate cracking. By the god, that might even end him. Gastag presses on, taking a detonation on his right pauldron. He slaughters freely, working his way down the barricade. Once at the far side, back under some cover, he can turn his attention to the Space Marines.
"Putrefier!"
he barks over the comm.
"Slurt! Where are you?"
His visual field is already cluttered, spiraling with locator runes. More of the enemy are racing into the chamber's far end, trying to staunch this wound, and the volume of lasfire rakes upward. More of this, and even he will take too much damage.
"Just do what you are doing, Cardane Master,"
Slurt's voice comes back, sounding like it's a long way off.
"I have my own errands to run."
Gastag finally pulls up the Putrefier's locator amid all the junk and sees that Slurt is nowhere near. He's heading deeper into places where no true defenders will be, only huddled, terrified fodder fit for nothing but the sustenance vats.
"Slurt!" he roars. "This is no time to—"
But he never finishes. Three tactical marines of a white consul squad have vaulted down from the gallery, and already they are mobbing Branad. A heavy weapons team drags something multi-barreled in through the far chamber doorway. They are fighting furiously, these defenders, and the attack on the barricades falters. Even the carapace-armored defenders are rallying, making up in numbers and coordination for what they lack in individual power. Gastag snarls and guns his chainsword up a notch. Slurt can do what he wants.
"The rot stops here!"
he voxes to his counterparts, irritated, striding with greater purpose now.
"Tear them apart!"